if you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on and fly with me. Let's fly away.
Come ladies and gentlemen, in preparation for landing, please return your seat backs and tray tables to their full upright and locked position and extinguish all smoking materials. Oh, I'm sorry, I kind of got lost in the 70s there for a minute. Here we are. Let me set the stage. There's three of us sitting in a corner of the gate area in the Raleigh-Durham Airport waiting for the plane to pull in. We all happen to have on identical navy blue skirts and jackets. We have colorful scarves around our necks and high heels. We're putting our heads together because we want to make absolutely sure that we all understand the game plan. Because once we start, there will be no time for hesitation, no time for questions. We're stewardesses, and we are about to work one of the most challenging flights on Delta Airlines' route system. It's a fast dinner service to Chicago. It's 1973, and the Civil Aeronautics Board regulates the airline industry. They dictate what cities airlines can fly to, and they dictate the price for a ticket. So if you want to fly from New York to Miami, for example, the ticket price is the same whether you go on Eastern or National. So if the price is the same, how do airlines distinguish themselves and gain a competitive edge? With service, frequency of flights, on-time arrivals and departures, excellent handling of baggage, and the friendliness of the crews. And as far as in-flight amenities, we don't have entertainment systems yet. Those are a few years down the road, so you kind of have to make your own fun, but Delta will help you out. There's a wide variety of magazines and nice leatherette binders. There are postcards. You can catch up on your correspondence. For kids, there's little activity books and wings, and maybe even a trip to the cockpit if it's a long enough flight. Does anybody remember Airplane? If you want to play solitaire on your tray table, you can have a souvenir deck of playing cards. Oh, if you forgot your lighter, don't worry. Just ask the stewardess for a book of matches, and you can smoke your brains out between point A and point B. That was the environment then, but the number one amenity that had the most competitive clout was food. Food was a big deal. It was served on many, many flights, even insanely short ones like the one that we're about to do. So we're waiting for the plane to come in, and we're really a little bit concerned. The three of us, we've never met until yesterday when we started this trip, and none of us have done this flight before, but we're very experienced. We each have 3 years of flying under our belts, and we've done fast services, so we know we can do this. And there's no way that we are going to write on our flight report that we failed to finish the service. None of us wants that black mark on our permanent record. So one of the other reasons that this flight is so difficult is that we absolutely hate the aircraft that we're going to be working on. It's a DC-9 that Delta inherited when it merged with Northeast Airlines, and it has only one galley in the very front. Now, Delta's version has two galleys, one in the front, one in the back, which means that one person can work first class and two can work coach. But with this, we're going to have to work the entire airplane as one big cabin. Not good. The galley is tiny. Only one person can be in there. So we've decided that the shortest one of us, it makes the most sense that she will be what we call the galley girl. She will be in that spot for the entire flight. And it's her responsibility to cook the meals for the correct amount of time. She can't start them too early. She can't start them too late. And she has to have everything ready for us at our fingertips so that we can properly do the in-flight service. She has this little hinged table between the galley and the first class aisle. And she props that up, and that's where she sets everything for us to pick up and deliver. Now, Marie is going to be the beverage girl, and that means that by default, I'm the meal runner. There's no wheeled meal cart, mind you. All the trays are in the galley in metal containers, and they have to be set up individually, and I will run them all out individually. After takeoff, when the plane, the angle of the plane is such that we can sort of safely get up, we quickly put on our red paisley aprons and our flat shoes and get ready for action. Now, to do the first class service efficiently, Marie and I have to do a kind of choreographed routine that split-second timing. She starts out, she passes out a hot towel to each first-class passenger. I follow immediately behind her and put a white linen tablecloth on each table. She then follows on my heels, starts to pick up the used hot towels and take beverage orders. Second, that I'm finished with the tablecloths, I finish picking up the rest of the hot towels and help her finish the beverage service. So by this time, the passengers in the first row are ready for their meals. I grab two trays, serve them to the first two passengers on the right side of the aisle. Now, I've noticed on the passenger list that these two are a pilot who works for Delta and his wife, and their kids are sitting in the two seats across the aisle from them. We call these passengers non-revenue passengers or non-revs, meaning that they're flying for free. And I have found that non-revs can sometimes be more demanding than paying passengers. There's just something about the fact that it's a freebie and they are going to milk it for all it's worth. And this family strikes me as the type who are going to be a nuisance. Kids have already asked for refills on their Cokes twice. And the wife looks at her salad dressing and says, "Don't you have anything else?" "We don't." They're probably going to slow us down. So I continue serving meals, and Marie comes right behind me with a bottle of wine in each hand, and she says, "Would you care for wine, red or white? Would you care for wine, red or white?" It's not very gracious, but she doesn't really have time to explain that the Chardonnay has a rich, buttery after note, and the Cabernet is full-bodied and complex. It's just pour a glass of wine and move on. After I've served about half of the meals, I pick up a basket full of warm rolls from the little shelf and use tongs to plunk one down on each tray before I finish serving the other 10 meals. So we continue with this little routine until we've completed the first class service. So now it's time to move into coach. The seats are arranged two on one side of the aisle and three on the other. And there's a fully stocked drink cart strapped into a cubicle behind the last row of the airplane. So that's where I start serving meals so that Marie can follow me from back to front as I serve the meals. Tonight, we are serving one of Delta's most popular coach meals. And it does. It's people made fun. People made fun. I'm telling you, they weren't that bad. If you're hungry. And it smells wonderful. It's barbecue chicken with green beans and mashed potatoes, and perched on the edge of each tray is a wonderful looking dessert that I've never seen before. It's a little key lime tart with graham cracker crust and a big dollop of whipped cream on top. So I put my meals down, and let me tell you, I am meal runner extraordinaire, and I have wings on my feet. This is going to get done. So I race back up to the front of the airplane, grab two more trays, pivot, walk back to the back of the plane, and it's tight space, but I do a smart little pivot, and I walk back up to the galley, and I continue to do this, and it's almost like I'm in a zen-like state. I hear this little disembodied voice saying, "Be one with the meals." And that's, you know, that's very, that's really pretty comforting, and I like that. So I continue to do this, and around the time I've served maybe the sixth or seventh row, I get back up to the front of the airplane, and something is interfering with my meditation. There's just this little something in my peripheral vision, and I ignore it, and I realize, though, that it's the non-rev pilot who's sitting on the aisle seat of the first row, and he's trying to catch my eye. No, nope, nope, nope. Nope, I ignore him, and I grab the two trays, and I race back down the aisle as fast as I can. I put the trays down, and I pivot, and I walk back up to the front of the airplane. Well, this time, I can't believe it. I think he's making this little waving motion with his hand. Not sure, because I'm not looking at him. And the little Zen master voice says, "No, no, no, ignore him. You have to be one with the meals." But my own voice is kind of taking over, and it says, "What a jerk. This guy is riding for free. He sees how hard we're working to get this service done. He's just going to have to wait if he wants more wine, if he wants his tray picked up, whatever the hell he wants." I grab two more trays, and I race to the back, and I turn, and I race back up to the front. "Miss," he says. I, you know, obviously can no longer ignore him. Everybody heard him say that. I turn to him and smile with my lips, but not with my eyes. And I say, "Yes, sir." He motions for me to get down to his level. I'm like, "Oh, God." So I do. He whispers into my ear, "I just want to tell you that every time you come up the aisle, you have more and more whipped cream on your rear end." I had become one with the meals. So what did I learn from this experience? Well, three things that obviously I should have already known. One, don't prejudge people and presume that you know their motives. Two, never ignore a passenger who's trying to get your attention, no matter what kind of a hurry you're in. And three, always, always watch your back.